Hey guys, Alex Lokes here, and welcome back to the Classic Camera Revival. We are here in the lovely Beaches neighborhood of Toronto, and this episode, our September episode, we have a special guest host on the show, Mr. Bill Smith.
Hi, good evening, and thank you for having me on.
Well, it is truly a pleasure, and we must have effed up somewhere because the table is just covered in Nikon cameras. And if you haven't...
It's effing crazy.
Yes, yes it is. So let's roll.
Coming to you live from Toronto, Canada, this is the Classic Camera Revival. If you don't have gear acquisition syndrome now, you certainly will after listening to our show.
Okay, so today's episode, we are going to fall down a proverbial rabbit hole, which is the Nikon camera line. But because Nikon just has so many different cameras, so many submodels, we're going to focus solely on their professional single-digit cameras. So we're going to work from the F to the F5, so pretty much anything pre-year 2000. So we're going to kick it off, and I'm going to let Bill and John talk on the Nikon F, the very first professional SLR.
And what I want to get your opinion on, Bill, and I actually talked about the F on my other podcast, and the thing that strikes me about the Nikon F was that when it came out in 1959 and literally changed the world of photojournalism, but if you look at all its features, it wasn't really first with anything. It was not the first pentaprism, not the first 35mm SLR, not the first automatic lens, not the first, I looked it up, it was not the first automatic lens. It's no. Some other obscure camera from the 40s, I think, had, not the first with the automatic diaphragm. But what about it made it take over?
I think what happened with Nikon F, like the 35mm SLR, it was gaining ground in the 50s, but really more with just the amateurs. Like the most popular example would be the Asahi Pentax S. And if you're one of the lucky people out there who has a K, but they only made them for a year, yeah, you got a nice camera right there. The thing, what happened was Nikon came out, they had a line of 35mm rangefinder cameras that were going head-to-head with Leica and, to a lesser extent, Zeiss Icon with their Contax 2 and 3As. What happened with Nikon is they saw the rise of the 35mm SLR, so they came along saying, okay, we want to build a better mousetrap. So they came up with what amounted to the... Yeah, they're not the first with the pentaprism, they're not first with the automatic diaphragm. They're not the first with anything, but they built a better mousetrap. It's modular. And that is one thing, and because you can take the prism head off, you can put it with slightly later models. Like if you had like one of the first year's production, they only came with an eye level prism and a waist level finder, or maybe I can't remember if they had the sports finder or not, but by year two or year three, which would just be around the early 60s, you would get like the classic meter heads you would see with the flag finder. They would, and granted, unfortunately, you'll have won the lottery if you found one that actually works and is accurate, because unfortunately, a lot of repair techs will take a look at you and think you're clinically insane if you want to get that revived. But again, they look cool. The big features with the Nikon S, and I think the reason why photojournalists latched onto them, because they kind of had a similar functionality to, like, say, the Nikon SP, the S2, and the S3. So for them, ergonomically, it's sort of like, okay, this is not totally alien turf for me. And what really, and it goes to show you, like, they produced them from 1959 to about 1974.
Yep. And when you think of these days at how short a model tends to last,
absolutely.
The pro ones, the thought of a model lasting 15 years is incredible. And I guess that's just a sign of the modularity. Like, you know, through the lens metering was not quite a thing when it came out. But you could get the Photomic head when it came out, and boom, you know, your Nikon F was basically obsolescence proof.
To a point. Now, thing is, if you had like a later meter head like the, because they had different Fotomac meter heads. You had the T, and then you had the TN, and you have the FTN. Now, the thing with the TN versus the FTN, and this is going really deep into geek world. The TN, you've got to change, every time you change a lens, you got to change the little dial with the speed to, so you can match the aperture with the shutter speed. Otherwise, your exposure is going to be off. The FTN, not a problem. And generally, if you're going to include a Nikon F Fotomac into your collection, I'd say look for an FTN, because chances are you might get one with a functioning meter. And yeah, you don't, you can sort of sail away with it and work.
I guess that's one, the one silver lining of the cloud. If you get one, like both of my Nikon Fs, the meter heads are
dead.
Effed. If the meter's not working, you don't have to worry about doing the shuffle back and forth to get the aperture to index.
Yeah.
It's just basically a big, ugly, plain prism head that's worth about 1/5.
Well, actually, these eye-level prism heads, sometimes they can be worth more than the camera. The advantage, if you've got a dead meter head, either it's the classic Sunny 16, or if you got your hands on a Siconic or a Gosen light meter, or even an app on your smartphone, you're still good.
Absolutely, because the Nikon F is a fully mechanical camera, and it doesn't need a battery to work. In fact, in the metered heads, the battery actually goes into the head, not into the camera body. Unlike the next in the line, the Nikon F2, which is my personal favorite mechanical camera, and it goes even deeper into the rabbit hole than the Nikon F did in the plethora of variants that you could get. Now, the one that I have is the Nikon F2 Fotomac, which is the original one with the meter. And again, fully mechanical, so it will work with or without a battery. But again, unlike the F, the battery actually goes into the camera body. So, again, this is a camera that pretty much came out of the jungles of Vietnam and really improved on the Nikon F, especially when it came to through the lens metering, because they almost instantly had a metered head for it.
Yes. And the other thing with the F2... the original F, unfortunately, had to take 625, the 1.35 Mallory mercury cells, which are basically the 625 you can get if you look online, alkaline, 1.5 volts alkaline or silver oxide batteries. There are available out there, but you got to hunt for them. The F2 takes a silver oxide 357 you can find just about anywhere on planet Earth. Mm-hmm. And that's the big bonus. Now, the one thing with the F, the plain Fotomac, and again, there's a magic year, 1977, and that's when really it shook up the F2, and of course the entire Nikon product lineup, is when they introduced automatic indexing lenses.
Yes.
So pre-77, you had what was known as the DP1 meter head, which is the plain Fotomac. Now, post-77, it's called the DP11. I got it right. And then if you're lucky enough to have an SB, which is, again, it's... so what's the difference between the two? It's a more sophisticated meter. And if you're to look into the SB into for metering, it's going to look a lot like a... the metering is just going to look just like a Nikon FM or an FM2. And it's just the same. It's, in fact, I almost wonder if this was the prototype, and then they just cascaded throughout the product line going forward. Downside with SBs, and it's a post-77 cousin, the AS, they're freakishly expensive. You're starting at about $400, and if you get a pristine black AS, you're looking $800, $900, even $1,000.
Oh, yeah.
No. It gets a little scary.
So the one that I have, which one is that?
You have the S. Now, this was made, and I have a black version of this exact same camera.
It's not the LED meter head. It's not a meter.
It's a precursor to the SB. Is the DP2 meter head or the Nikon F2S. It's got a more sensitive meter in it than the standard Fotomac. They made them for, I believe, I want to say 1973, 74, maybe to 75. there's sort of the thing with Nikon, and there's a little bit of bleed through with its product cycles, pre-1977. So it's actually a nice meter head. Like, I enjoy shooting with it. You can tell it because it's the tallest of the F2 meter heads. So if you see one out in the wild, or if you're at a film photography meetup somewhere, wherever you are in the world, yeah, if the person's got a really tall meter head, chances are it's a Nikon F2S on their hands.
And the F2 are solid cameras. I mean, like, you could take it out into the zombie apocalypse, double it as a blunt force weapon, while taking beautiful photos of the end of the world. And like I said before, it is hands down my favorite mechanical camera. I know I can trust it in any weather condition. And those AIS lenses are just sharp as anything.
Especially the 2.8 AIS. I love that floating element. It's got to be one of my favorite Nikkor lenses.
Yeah, it's one I'm lusting after.
And it's neat that you can see the progression of the ergonomics from the Nikon F to the F2. My favorite change in the F2 is where they put the shutter release.
Yes.
Moving it towards the front makes all the difference.
Absolutely.
But, of course, we should clarify that the Nikon F body was basically, they start off with the chassis of, was it the SP, the rangefinder?
Yes.
Pretty much.
Of course, if you notice the Nikon F, you pull the bottom off. So the bottom of the back is like a one-piece assembly. You pull that off, whereas in the F2...
It's a standard door.
Now, the thing with the F is, if you want to motor drive with that F...
Oh, yeah.
Again...
Plus, you can put this massive film magazine on the back.
Yeah, I believe they make them for F2s as well.
Bulk rolls, yeah.
Well, that was just another example of, you know, if you could... You could take an F, and if you had enough money to... Or your company had enough money to pay for it, you could configure an F to do almost anything.
Exactly.
Like, or you need a lens. You need a lens that has a 220 degree field of view.
You could get
bring your checkbook.
Yep.
But we can do it for you.
Absolutely.
Now, another thing with F2s, more so, I don't think the F ever had any special editions. The F2 had one called the Titan, which is sort of a small limited number made of titanium. I've only seen one in my travels, and it's a gentleman I know in the Oakville Camera Club. He has one along with a reproduction
S3. Nice.
And yes, you just sit there, camera envy sets in. And again, for listeners out there, and of course, if you've got the nickels and dimes in your sock drawer and you want one, shop very carefully, because there are a plethora of fakes out there.
Yep.
Are these like basically the people who got tired of making fake Leicas that now got into fake Nikons or Nikons?
Oh, no. They would actually take a run-of-the-mill F2 and they'll change the finish on it to make it look like a Titan.
Oh.
I mean, they're not like the Chinese knockoff. They're that sophisticated. They'll take a run-of-the-mill eye-level prism, because the Titan was only available as an eye-level prism.
Right.
Which actually, with Nikon F2s, the eye-level prism is actually kind of rare. Because originally it was positioned as the bargain basement F2, but in reality nobody bought them because everyone went for the photomics instead.
Yep. But again, still, those eye-level prisms, just in general, for the F and the F2, they run for a lot of money, especially for the F, without any sort of meter in it.
So if you have a friend of the family who has, you know, it's like the classic widow going, yeah, my husband had a small camera collection, a couple of Nikon. If you go over and you see one with an eye level F or F2 and just take it.
Yep.
Just take it. You know, just if she asks for money, just, and it's reasonable, just put the money down and walk away. You can get them serviced.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. And that's what's really great about Nikons is that who's the guy who still services Sover something?
Sover Wong out of the UK is an F2 specialist. I haven't had any of mine worked on by him. I've used Toronto Camera Services out of Liberty Village, and they've done a good job with the stuff I've given them.
Fantastic.
But if you're looking to have yours done, Silver Wong, he's not cheap, but he will switch out the resistor rings in the meters, because they're the ones that, especially the really early ones, the original versions, and again, it's one of those, hazy 40-something memory. There's a little dot underneath, and it signifies what kind of resistor ring there that's in the camera. And I can't remember the color offhand, but it'll be one of those. Once this podcast is up, I'll probably post underneath the comments on Facebook, and you'll see it there. But the early versions are basically toast. But what Silver does, he makes new ones.
Nice.
Now, I wish he would sell them so I can have my people kind of just do it. But no, he wants to do the whole thing. But if you get yours done, you're looking at about $500. But I see it as $500 probably well spent, because the camera will last another 15, 20 years.
Absolutely.
You were talking about it once, Bill, and you said when you get it back, like if you want your Nikon to be better than new, send it to this guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. Better than the factory.
Yeah.
Like, I'd love to send, like, you know, at some point, send a Nikon F over and get it resuscitated. like the black one. Cause I just love the, like, it's beaten.
Oh, yeah.
And I love that about it. But the film counter is toast, and it just needs a general CLA. It's pretty gummy.
Yeah.
But I just love how it looks.
Hmm.
So I guess now we're moving from F2 to F3.
Yeah.
This was controversial at the time.
Yeah, the 80s were a weird time with big hair and big shoulder pads, and I'm so glad I grew up in the 90s.
I'm old enough to remember the... Well, John and I are old enough to remember the 80s.
I'm
and
the
again,
oldest guy here, so...
Yes.
Well, it's funny with the F2. Unlike the early 70s when Nikon sort of made the F2 along, because again, when the F2 came out, the hardcore photojournalist community, they were a little skeptical of it. And again, they're skeptical about everything, so they kept making the F for a little while. And of course, if you come across an F with a little plastic capped film winder, that was called the Apollo. Basically, they were sharing parts.
Yeah,
nothing special there. But 1980, Nikon yanked the Band-Aid off and killed the F2 in 1980. And, of course, F2s went up in price.
Yep. Because everyone wanted mechanical. No one wanted a camera that you absolutely 100% needed a battery for if you wanted to use it at all the functions. I mean, it had a backup like 1/80th of a second.
At one speed, I think like 1/90th, 1/80th around there.
Yeah. But if you really wanted to use the F3 to its full potential, you did need battery power for it. Now, that being said, there are a lot of people who swear by the F3.
It's become very popular.
I have two. I have one just like John's here with the motor drive, and I got another one without. Mm-hmm. I love them because they're, oddly enough, even though they're a creature of the 80s, they actually were made up until like the late 1990s.
Even beyond that, they made them up until the year 2000.
Oh, wow.
They were still producing the
F3. Other cool bit of trivia is, and this was the first time Nikon went outside the company to get it designed. They went to a gentleman named, Giorgetto.
The Italian guy?
Yeah. He owned a design firm called Ital Design, and you're sitting there going, okay, well, I've heard that before. They were also the people who designed the Maserati Bora, the Ghibli, the Volkswagen Golf, and they've also had a hand in designing the Nikon F4, and I believe the F5 as well.
Yeah, and it also was the first Nikon camera to introduce the red stripe, which is something that almost all Nikon cameras have, that little red accent.
Yes. It's not just a Jamaican beer.
No. Exactly. Exactly.
Not that there's anything wrong with Jamaican beer.
But, I mean, if you haven't seen an F3, there's a good chance you've heard the F3. And I chuckle every time I hear a Henry's commercial that has a shutter noise. It's the F3 with the motor drive. No matter what camera they're advertising, a point-and-shoot digital, a Canon, a Nikon, a Pentax, a Sony, it's the Nikon F3 with the MD4 motor drive.
It's become iconic.
Yes, exactly.
And somewhere a Canon product manager is cringing every time they hear that.
Absolutely. But my one advice is, if you are looking for an F3, definitely find one with the HP or the high point finder. Because, I mean, every single person here around the table is wearing glasses. And truly makes it a lot easier to use the camera if you have with or without glasses. And it just, it looks nicer. And another interesting little piece of trivia about the F3 is that they actually modified one to film the minecart chase scene in Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. They actually made it into a motion picture camera because they needed something small enough and sturdy enough to rig onto this model to do the minecart chase. So, and also, didn't these things go into space or something?
Yeah, NASA actually bought a bunch of them and had them modified for the shuttle program.
Yeah.
And wasn't it also, was there not a limited run autofocus version towards the end?
Yes, but we don't talk about that. It's like the red-haired stepchild.
Yeah, we keep under the stairs and feed fish heads.
Exactly.
The one thing, like I just got my F3 quite recently, and I used to have one. I gave that one away because it wasn't working all that well. This one comes with the motor drive. And it's just so, it's like monolithic. Like I said, like, you know, if what SLR would Darth Vader use? I think he'd use one of these. But despite the fact that the motor drive is huge, the camera is balanced so beautifully.
Oh, absolutely.
You don't feel the weight at all. It's one of those cameras that ergonomically is so perfect, it becomes an extension of you. You're not fighting it.
Absolutely. And you throw the iconic 105mm f2.5 AIS lens on it, and you feel like Steve McCurry. McCurry?
Yeah, McCurry. Actually, the 105 2.5, regardless if it's the pre-AI or the or whatever manual focus permutation, it's got to be one of the best portrait lenses on the market.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what he used to take
the Afghan girl.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I do have one, and it's pre-AI. And also, one good thing about the F3 is that you can put on the pre-AI lenses, because basically from 77 on, you can use AI glass on any Nikon up till today, but as we get further and further, you know, down the years, there are fewer and fewer Nikons that could accept pre-AI glass. For a time, Nikon, you could send your pre-AI lenses back to Nikon, and for a fee, they would do the little
modify it
so it would fit. Nikon stopped. You know, I think if you called up Nikon today and asked, they'd probably be laughing at you for 20 minutes.
Probably
saying no. There are people who will do it. It's one of those things where, because it's in theory, it's not hard to do, there are people have had their lenses botched.
Yes.
I think with something like that is very much shop your tack, get recommendations from fellow film shooters wherever you are. And because, again, you know, I'd sooner give my money to someone who's a legit repair tech who knows what they're doing. And again, it makes a difference.
Yeah.
But as it is, even without the modification, you can use pre-AI glass on the F3 and the F4, which we'll get to later. You just have to be prepared to meter in stop down mode, which is not the end of the world.
Yeah.
If you're shooting black and white, you're not metering every shot unless the light's rapidly changing.
Yep.
Now, the other thing with the F3, it did have a few special additions. Now, there's the champagne-colored F3T, which has a bit of a price premium. Again, that's also depending on the condition of the camera. If it looks like it was used to beat off zombies and or freedom, quote-unquote, freedom fighters. Although most likely this particular camera was probably used by wealthy dentists. You know, again, your mileage may vary on the condition of the camera. The other one is the F3 Press, and there are some differences. Like if you're looking at a general F3 FP, you don't have a hot shoe on top of the prism.
No.
You got to get a little adapter and put it over the rewind knob.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is, you don't have the camera is weather sealed, so you don't have a provision for a
cable release.
See, my brain cells are not firing on all six cylinders tonight. So yeah, so there's subtle differences, and they came with a motor drive. They weigh a ton. They do command a price premium, and most of them look like they've been through hell because they were used by actual photojournalists.
And to me, that's a big part of their charm.
Yes.
Yes.
And all these cameras you know, if I'd love to know the stories that they were used to tell.
Mm-hmm.
I'd love to, because, you know, for all of these cameras, I don't think we're the first owner for any of them.
No.
Certainly I'm not, probably not even the second or even third owner.
Mm.
And so that part of the history has been lost. But oh, to know what that history was.
Actually, I think you're the third on
I'm
your
the
F3.
Third? Okay.
I think. I'm not sure if it was owned by someone before I got it.
Okay.
But it came to me from a former photojournalist from his family, actually. Yeah. He had passed on, and they caught wind that I liked photography and basically handed me this F3 kit with almost all my AI glass and AIS glass, the flash, motor drive, body, the whole kit caboodle. Just handed it to me.
If you look up right place at the right time in the dictionary, you see Alex's smiling face. I hate you.
But no. The F3 is pretty much the penultimate in the way of semi-automatic manual focus cameras.
One more question. Was there also, I'm trying to remember, was there like a special high-speed version?
I believe there was, with
like
the motor
like a
drive.
Fixed semi-transparent mirror or something, so you could really like go like 9 frames a second.
Possibly.
Maybe. Probably for sports photographers.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's back when I think Canon came out with the F. They were F1. Messing around with the new F1 as opposed to the F1N from the mid-70s. That's a topic for another podcast.
Yeah.
But hole to go down.
Yeah. But again, as we progress forward in time, the number of different editions or variants of each camera actually slims down. Because, I mean, by this point, the technology is really settling down, right? It's nothing new, right? I mean, it started off with nothing new, but as time progressed, especially through the 50s, now we're into the 80s, so yeah, semi-automatic is pretty standard through the lens metering is pretty standard. The next big jump we see with the F4, and that's matrix metering. And the F4 is, again, a serious change for Nikon. We suddenly get away from manual focus, we go into autofocus, and we go into multiple metering modes. You have spot, center weighted, and the matrix metering, which was truly developed with the FA, which we discussed in an earlier podcast. And I like the F4.
Well, me too.
It was my SLR of choice for many, many years until I picked up the F5, and we'll get into the F5 later. It's big, it's heavy. You can walk through a dangerous part of town and use it to beat your attackers, and then be able to take photos of them for the police. And, I mean, this thing is fast and it's quiet. In fact, the people who went from the F3 to the F4, both them and the models were complaining that they couldn't hear the shutter sound to know to change poses. And it is blisteringly fast. I mean, it can go to 1/8,000th of a second, yeah. So you don't need a high-speed camera. It just is. And again, there's really three different versions of it. They're the F4, the F4S, and the F4E. And depending on, and again, each thing is swappable by the additional battery group.
Mm-hmm.
So you can go with a really lightweight one that takes like 4 AA batteries. And that's another thing I like about the F4, that it takes AA batteries.
Oh, me too.
So I can be in Cobalt, Ontario. I can be in Moose Factory, Ontario, walk into a corner store and get AA batteries for my F4. And for those who don't know Moose Factory, you can't actually drive through to. You need to catch a train from Cochrane to Moosonee and then catch a ferry to Moose Island.
So we're not talking a heavily urbanized environment.
No. No, definitely not. And again, you go to the F4S, you're looking at 6, and then the F4E, I believe it's 8.
What's it like on the AA batteries in terms of battery life compared to, say, the F3?
Oh, it's really good.
I'm still on my first set.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm probably the one person at this table that doesn't own an F4.
No one's perfect.
Yet, as the saying goes, I have played with my brother's one in the past. It's actually a fun camera to use. It's one of those I never quite got into. I'll probably get the lightest of the ones that only takes the four AA's.
Yeah.
I would say that what I like about the F4, a couple of things. Again, it feels beautiful in the hand. It feels like an extension. I think of all the Nikon, the particular Nikon F and F2 and F3 that I have, it has the nicest viewfinder. Now, it could just maybe my older ones need some cleaning or whatever.
Yeah.
But I had, it's really nice and clear. I love the fact that it has built-in diopter.
Yes.
So I don't have to worry about the glasses.
Or fiddling with different external diopters.
Exactly. One less thing to lose. And one thing that strikes me about the camera, you know, compared to, let's say, the DSLR or other digital cameras today, there is a discrete physical control for every function.
Yes.
As opposed to, John, my camera's not working, and I'm down on like on submenu 37 trying to figure out just what the blank is going on. A camera with physical controls for every function, that's like coming home.
Exactly. And I've actually described the F4 as the best manual camera that Nikon ever produced, because it does have a weakness, and that is its autofocus. It's slow.
Yes, that's what happened, I think, in the 1990s. That's the reason why the F3, they continued on making the F3, because the F4 autofocus was a dud. In fact, the N90S or the F90X, depending where you are on planet Earth, that wound up becoming the photojournalist camera of choice for autofocus because it was a fast autofocus.
Yes.
I do have one of those, and it's a fun little camera.
We've talked about that camera before a couple of times.
It's actually dirt cheap.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Like, they are so inexpensive.
Yeah. Pick one up for $30.
Exactly. The only thing that's missing for me is it doesn't have a diopter.
Yes.
But if you want a cheap way to check out the F4 experience, try an N90.
F or N90. Yes.
You know, it'd be either the F90X, yes. I believe that's the rest of planet Earth, and the N90S is for the U.S. market.
Yeah.
Two flavors of awesome.
Yeah. But if you are jonesing for an F4, any of the F4, the F4S, F4E is fine. Just make sure that it comes with the DP20 head on it, because that will give you the full range of metering from spot, center weighted, and full matrix.
I've also noticed that, considering just how much of a camera it is, the price for F4 bodies online is quite reasonable.
Yes.
This is not an expensive camera.
No, it's not.
What's the going market rate for one in decent shape?
I've seen them as cheap as $2.
Yeah, that's how much I paid for mine with the exchange rate from B&H. I actually bought it direct from B&H at their store the first time I went to New York City, and just took it out that day. I also bought the 105 F2D lens at the same time, joined them together, and went out and shot in Central Park, and just blown away, like right off the bat.
Yeah, so you do not have to mortgage your house or sell your firstborn to pick one of these up.
Or sell vital organs.
Yeah. And that brings us to the penultimate in the Nikon F line, and that's the F5. And this is a camera that is not at a reasonable price point. And the interesting thing is that when I got into film photography initially, I was shooting with a Nikon F80, which is a good camera. You stick the battery grip on the bottom of it, and you have a decent shooting experience. But I also discovered the F5 at that point. Now, I was just starting working at Sheridan at the time, and actually I was still shooting the F80 when I met Bill in the parking lot outside the Oakville Henry's. He was the other film
guy who went to the store.
Yeah. Yeah, he was the other film guy who went to the store to drop off processing back when Henry's actually had a full range of processing through Silvano's. But I mean, I wanted the F5, but it was still commanding like $1,000+ on the market. We are talking like the late 2000s at this point. And it was only until recently, I actually shot a wedding with the point of taking the money I had earned and buying an F5 with that money. And I just kept looking at KH, and finally there it was. It's like, finally.
It called to you?
Yes, and I bought it. And it is beautiful. I mean, it basically takes the best of all the Nikon's professional cameras and brings it into one. I mean, you can use pre-AI, AI, AIS, and the autofocus D and G type lenses.
And does it support the G lenses fully?
Yes. Yes, because everything's controlled from the camera. So it has the two command dials. In fact, at quick glance, and people have actually seen the 5 and ignored the F and asked, oh man, are you shooting the D5? What's it like? And I go, well, you know, it has the same sensor size as the D5, 35 by 24, you know, miniature format. And that really pisses people off. No, it's full frame. Yeah, miniature format, right?
So what you do is you put on back a little hand-drawn happy face.
Absolutely.
On a piece of paper.
Yeah.
Here's the view screen.
Yep. But, I mean, and honestly, the F5 has become my camera of choice when I do street photography, which is completely against what a lot of people see in street photography. It's like, oh, I want a rangefinder and short lenses and get up close. I'm like, well, no, I like the F5 with the 105 F2. Beautiful camera, great for street photography. You throw in a 400 speed film and you go to town, right?
Has anyone here ever messed around with an F6?
I'm afraid not.
Has anyone seen an F6?
They're the reason why we're not talking about the F6. The first fact is none of us have an F6. The second fact is that we're talking about professional cameras, cameras marketed for pro photographers. By the time the F6 was released, it was more aimed at advanced amateurs or digital shooters who wanted a camera that they were completely familiar with. There were the F6. Also, it's still made, and it's post-2000, which is sort of our general cutoff line for gear within the show. It's kind of a cut-down F5, really, because the F5 is a beast. It has the battery grip integrated into it. And if you've seen a D1, a D2, a D3, D4, D5, you've seen an F5, because especially the D1, D2, almost the exact same chassis, pretty much.
I wouldn't be surprised they even modified the molds for the outer ABS around the chassis.
Probably.
So it sounds like you're saying that, in your opinion, the F5, though, was the pinnacle in terms of professional, a camera aimed at pros?
Absolutely. And, I mean, like, Canon had their EOS 1 line of cameras, and I've shot an EOS 1, and they're about the same. I mean, I love the fact that the F5 can use every single lens to its full capacity within the Nikon lineup. Of course, not counting the DX lenses,
the
which are designed
ones.
For a crop sensor.
We won't go there.
But again, ever since I got the F3 and switched from truly Minolta into Nikon and built up my lens collection, my D300 is long gone, my D70S is long gone, but the Nikon film cameras are still there. The lenses are still there. And in fact, I even have an adapter that allows me to use my AIS lenses on my digital. And they're beautiful. And talking Nikon optics is just a whole other show, because that's just a whole other alphabet soup right there.
That's one of the reasons why, you know, the F became so popular, that in very short order they had every conceivable lens that you could ask for.
Yeah, and if you were to ask me out of the early lenses, I'd say my two favorites would be almost the... everyone's going to say the Nikkor S50 F1.4. I love the Nikkor H50 F2. It is sharp as a tack. Mm. It's light. It's lesser expensive in the used market. And then the other one is the 105 F2.5, like the pre-AI version. I've got the AIS version, and I've got an AI version. I got three of them. They're all good, but I've got a weak spot for the pre-AI version because my dad, with his camera set up, he had one, and it took a lot of family photos.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've got the 105-25 pre-AI as well. I love that lens.
I have the AIS version, and it's one I'm never getting rid of, right along with the 105 f2.
So maybe to change attack a bit, here's a question for both of you. I guess it's time for an argument.
Okay.
If someone says, wow, I've really enjoyed listening to you guys talk about the Nikon F line, and I want to get into it, what body should I start with? Round one.
How much money you got?
Pretty much. It all comes down to that. But I would actually recommend going with something in the F2 line first. It really doesn't matter which one it is. But yeah, no, the F2 is definitely a good starting place because you don't have to spend a lot to get a good one. And it will work whether the meter head works or not.
Yeah, sadly, there's not going to be a lot to debate here, but I tend to agree. If you can find yourself an F2 Fotomic that looks like it hasn't been beaten to death and the seals are good, and if the meter's behaving, it's, they'll grab it.
Yeah.
That's your great entry point. You can use pretty much any manual focus Nikon lens on it. I said manual focus, not autofocus.
Yes.
Autofocus, there's so many
and
asterisks.
Also, you can't use the Series E Nikon lenses as well. Simply because it's missing the claw.
Yes.
Yeah. Although it's a shame because there are two good Series E lenses.
Mm.
The rest are trash. The 51.8
yep.
is a sleeper
the
lens. The
pancake.
Yeah.
And the 75-150 zoom has a
absolutely.
Bit of a cult following. Even though it's got some mechanical issues, like it's a very loose zoom.
Mm-hmm.
Tip it over and the thing
yep.
just slides down. But there are a lot of people who just love the optical characteristics
oh, yeah.
of that zoom.
Hmm, interesting. I've got a Pancake 50 f1.8 AIS, which is sort of, I guess, a big brother to that Series E1. It's sharp as anything, but again, it doesn't have the rabbit claw, so you can't use it on any of the pro bodies.
Mm.
Well, unless it's an F3 or an F4 and up.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Say, for me, I hear what you guys are saying about the F2. It would come down, I don't think there is one right answer.
Of course not.
For me, it would come down to between the F2 and the F4. And I think the cameras are different enough in terms of their experience
mm-hmm.
that it's almost an apple and oranges
yeah.
question. So if someone says, what F body should I buy? I'll just say all of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, the F itself is a, again, there's, again, there are a few caveats again with, you know, the meter heads being what they are. It is a vintage camera. Like,
yep.
I mean, vintage in every sense of the word. So if you really want to try and reenact Michelangelo Antolini's blow up, that's the one you want.
Yeah.
So I know, Alex, you do battle reenactments. So if anyone does, like, you know, Vietnam reenactments, you know, they should just start carrying
a Nikon F.
Or anti-war protests.
Yep.
Nikon F.
Yep. The first time I saw Nikon F was actually watching Apocalypse Now.
Oh, the Dennis Hopper scene.
That's right. With the guy with cameras covering him. And there it was, the iconic flag Fotomic head on the Nikon F.
And they have become so iconic. The story that I remember, maybe 2 years ago, I was walking, or maybe perhaps three, I was walking down Yonge Street, and I had the Nikon F2 around my neck, and some guy looks at me as walking by, he muttered, photojournalist.
Yeah.
Like this was like 2012, maybe 2013, mm-hmm. decades after a pro photojournalist would use an Nikon F2, but it still has that iconic
yep.
place in people's consciousness.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And yeah, I mean, I've been doing street shooting with the F5 and I've had people chant paparazzi, paparazzi after me. And it's like, yeah, right.
Badge of honor.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, that about wraps it up for this episode. We'll be back next month. Until then, my name's Alex Lux, and I hope we didn't F anything up.
And we should thank Bill Smith.
Absolutely.
Again, thank you for having me on. It was a great pleasure. I've been following the podcast for a little while now.
Excellent. We're glad you had fun.
Thank you.
And this is John Meadows looking at the collection of cameras on the table. And all I can say is, all this and F2?
Boom.
Mic drop.